Rory thinks it is time to stop trying. We should leave capital T truth alone and move on. Rory thinks of truth as nothing more than a property of sentences, like 2 + 2 = 4. Cruelty is bad. Galileo preceded Newton. Good lectures are better than bad lectures. Right? When you're hungry, food sustains you. He says, right, all of those sentences are true. There's no problem with that. There is no interesting theory about what those sentences have in common, besides the fact that we all believe them. Any more than there is an interesting theory about what the various acts we approve of have in common. Their goodness, their virtueness, their abstract essence of approvability. No, there isn't. There's just various things we approve of. Similarly with truth. There are just various sentences we hold. Truth's a property of sentences, nothing more to say. Leave it at that. In fact, like James, Rorty thinks truth is a purely primitive, normative concept. It's a compliment you pay to a sentence that's working for you. Right? So, in a sense, we're back with James. Truth is what's good in the way of belief. And good, too, is just a compliment. You see an action, you approve of it. By saying good, you don't point out some particular feature it has. You simply say, yeah, keep doing that. I like that. And when you say bad, you say, don't do that anymore. I don't like that. That's all there is to it. And we don't need any more than that either. So what Rorty's saying is, James was mistaken in only one thing, calling that a theory of truth. It's not a theory of truth. It's a completely trivial remark to say about truth that it's a compliment you pay to sentences that work. It's completely trivial. And there's nothing wrong with that, as long as you realize that you don't have a theory of truth. What we have to do instead is what he calls change the conversation. And he gives a wonderful example. He says, in the 18th century, after Newton wrote, there was a profound dispute between the issue of primary and secondary causes. Right? Newton had shown all the secondary causes of motion, the laws of dynamics. But what were the primary causes? What were the divine causes? What were the purposes behind it that started those secondary causes in motion? And Rorty points something out. You know, we never solved that problem of what the primary causes were or what the relationship to the secondary causes were. We never solved it. You know what we did? At a certain point, we decided, you know, that's not a very fruitful topic of conversation. Let's just drop it. Let's just talk about secondary causes from here on in. And he says it's the exact same thing with truth. It's not that we have an answer for it. It's not that we can prove it's a bad question. It's not getting us anywhere. We've tried for 2,000 years. That's enough. Let's just drop it and move on to another conversation. Right? We should never try to offer such a theory or prove that such a theory is impossible, but just change the subject of high cultural conversation. Nonetheless, Rorty does argue at least a few claims against that correspondence theory of truth. Because such theories always assume that language is that medium of representation that we can compare to some fixed, final reality. And thus the connection between language and the world is a mirroring relation. Right? We saw this with air, that language could not be part of the world because it must mirror the world, it must picture the world, it must copy the world. But Rorty, with Quine and Davidson, thinks that language is part of the world. And the connection between our linguistic usages and other phenomena is purely causal. Right? We're a particular species, and our sounds, our culture, is a means of coping with our environment. It's a tool that in itself evolves as we evolve, like opposable thumbs. So, for example, Einsteinian physics, right, is preferable to Newton's, not because it accurately represents the world, or is a better copy of the world, or more accurately mirrors the nature of the world, but simply because it better helps us to cope with nature by allowing us to make more accurate predictions, more precise calculations, and a good deal more powerful control over physical processes. And if one thinks of all of culture as doing that, enabling one to cope,